Welcome to a Thursday, and that means welcome to Perspectives on WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for tuning in via the airwaves, and you are always welcome to be part of the conversation wherever that might lead at 850-414-1234, our telephone number. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email if that's your preferred means of communication. And we hope we can hear from you in the next hour, because we're talking about something that is now of prime import across the board. We hear about this in just about any discussion of anything that's impacting our society in a negative fashion. The kind of default position that we now have is if we could get more mental health care services into our society at large and make it more accessible, more affordable, more people plugged into this network, it would solve so many of our problems. So we're going to kind of bridge that discussion with some folks who know something about that today. First, we say hi to Mike Urick, who is now in charge of strategic thought processes and public policy and all of that kind of thing for Big Bend Hospice. And Mike, this was your idea, so this is all your fault, right?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I appreciate that. Thanks for having us here.
It is so great to have you, along with Pam Mazzina, who is now the director and counseling Lord High Honchoet, I guess, at the Capstone Center, which has a relationship to Big Bend Hospice, but is sort of not exactly the same thing. So first, Pam, hi. Second, Pam, how does all this work, and what exactly is Capstone for folks who don't know?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here and to talk about this topic. Capstone Center is actually the brainchild and baby of Big Bend Hospice. We are for-profit, and we are a counseling center here in Tallahassee, right down the road from Big Bend Hospice. We opened our doors in January of 2017, and the goal is we can provide counseling services outside of what Big Bend Hospice provided, which was primarily bereavement and end-of-life care. But also, as we grow up, we become a funding source for Big Bend Hospice. And it really is a social enterprise designed to make sure that Big Bend Hospice, which has been here 30-plus years, is going to be here long-term as a nonprofit hospice in our community.
As part of the bigger discussion when we get into healthcare, because now we're revisiting it once again on the federal level. Who'd have thunk it, huh? But mental health care services have all traditionally been treated kind of like dental care in that, boy, it's really nice to have if you can get it, but it's not altogether critical. We got to take care of the other more basic sorts of considerations first, be it to, you know, put a splint on that broken arm of yours or take out that appendix or what. That's the critical stuff. But, you know, if you need mental health care services, well, we'll talk about that later. But we're going to make it probably a lot less affordable than anything else that you can get. Is that the way that we've kind of fallen into, Mike?
The way I look at it, and you know, we do a lot of research, but it, you know, in the past, having the need for mental health or mental health counseling was kind of a stigma in our society. And what we're looking at now is it's more of an entitlement. If you can find it, if it's available, if it's affordable, and it's great to see that shift, especially if it is available and affordable for the current generations to be coming forward and utilizing mental health counseling services.
Yeah, to a larger degree, though, you still have, I guess, the older generation, if you will, the boomers and the generation immediately after that who still, I don't know, it is an expression of weakness if my employer finds out, I am going to lose that promotion. No way. They may put me on that let's see, what do they call it? The rehabilitative track. We're going to give you a performance enhancement plan, which is like the kiss of death because you admitted you can't handle the pressure.
Absolutely.
You caved in. You know, we're going to find someone who can work that 80-hour week without flinching.
Mm-hmm. And we see that all the time in some of our older clients is that sense of stoicism. And one of the things that we always talk about is, you know what, if you have a car, sometimes you have to get preventative care for it. You have to change the oil. You have to check the tires. And with all the stresses and all of the roles that people are trying to juggle nowadays, whether it's caregiving or taking care of grandkids or, you know, job stresses, financial stresses, surviving the hurricanes and other natural events, sometimes just having a safe and trusted advisor or counselor can help you kind of ward off breaking down in your car on the side of the street with nobody to call. And when you're talking about mental health, you know, there are various degrees of struggle that people go through. But for somebody who's really struggling with mental health issues, it can mean life or death. And so I think the critical issue for people to think about is, if somebody is in crisis and we say that, oh, yes, you can get into a counselor or a psychiatrist in a month, that may be too late. And so I think it's going to take the whole village of counselors and organizations and coalitions and ordinary American citizens to be able to raise this awareness up that mental health is as equally as important as physical health. And traditionally what has happened, because we only put the focus on that physical health, people were really using the emergency rooms and their primary care physicians for issues that were really mental health issues. And if you talk to physicians or people in the hospital, they'll say, we need more folks to deal with mental health issues so that we can free up the people that really need just physical care.
That previous generation sometimes not having access, in fact, before counseling became a cause célèbre in mental health protocols. We did have counselors. They were called barbers and bartenders.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But now they're not as available as they used to be.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. One of the I had a personal incident where I was trying to find mental health counseling, not behavioral health counseling, and Pam can address a little bit of the difference between that in the community. It was for a family issue, and it was the hardest exercise I went through trying to find mental health counseling. I could find behavioral health counselings, but not mental health counselors. And I finally found one. And when we started talking about the expansion of the services that Big Bend Hospice provides and what do we do best and what can we provide to the community at an affordable rate, and get it out there into the market and tell people, look, you know, we have over 36 years worth of experience in this field, and we're here, and it's affordable, and you don't have to go search. That's kind of how this concept evolved for Capstone Center.
Yeah, because there seems to be a lot of options when you see the number of shingles that are out there for counselors around town. There mm-hmm. are dozens and dozens of them. But again, Pam, other than, well, you know, you guys are affiliated with Big Bend Hospice. We trust that organization, so I guess we'll trust you too. How do you make the determination of, you know, who is better at handling what?
Well, I've been around the community for a long time and so have a lot of relationships. And I just want to say how fortunate we are in our community, especially here in Leon County, to have the number of wonderful resources we do, whether it's private counselors or organizations. We have Peace for the Big Bend, which is the trauma-informed work group. We have a mental health coalition. We have FSU. We have family. There are a lot of resources here. And a lot of us have connected personally and professionally, so we know what strengths we each have. And there's not a whole lot of, you know, we're going to fight amongst ourselves. There's a lot of people who will cooperate and refer so that the person needing help gets the help they need. And I think for us, we did really search ourselves, our hearts and souls, to see what we did best. And we know that we do grief loss, bereavement, suicide loss, suicide prevention, you know, pet loss. There are things that we're the best at. And when I come across somebody that has other needs, maybe it is they're struggling with, you know, a mental health diagnosis of schizophrenia, or maybe they're dealing with addictions, I know places to refer. And because I know the people, I can give a name. I can say, would you like me to call over to this village and set you up with so-and-so? And when you talk about people who are having any type of mental health issues, that extra act of kindness to have that guide through the system really makes a big difference, because there still are a lot of obstacles that people have to make to even reach out the first time. I know for us, sometimes people, it takes a month for them just to make the initial call. I think I need help. Can you help me?
And that's the critical first step, though. Again,
absolutely,
the admission that I got to take this beyond myself. I don't have the resources to handle
right.
this anymore.
And the first thing that comes out of my mouth always is, thank you for the courage it took for you to make this call. And then they'll go, oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It took me a month. I was a wreck. I tried to call you 8 times and put the phone down. So, again, that's the first thing, is to thank people for reaching out and seeking help.
We're talking about mental health, the affordability and accessibility of it here in our area. And we'd like to hear your story, too, right here on Perspectives. Mike Urich and Pam Messina here with us today. And we'd like to add your voice to that conversation as well. 850-414-1234 is our phone number. Or zip us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. A reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to our address, click on radio. There is a local programs menu, and then click Perspectives on that, and boink, you're right in. We archive past shows, try to have the latest program up as soon as we can within 24 hours of when it actually appears on the radio. This is breaking news here. Just pulled this off the wire from ACA. It always sounds like, you know, a cry of pain, but it's not. It is Agency for Healthcare Administration, which is provided by the state of Florida. And this is a headline that says, Expanding Mental Health Treatment Services. Secretary Mary Mayhew, who was appointed ACA director by Governor DeSantis, just said that the agency has an amendment to the state's managed medical assistance waiver, and that means Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have approved this request. A lot of gobbledygook. Essentially, it means, though, that there will be more mental health treatment services being made available to eligible recipients age 21 and older who are homeless, at risk of homelessness, who fall into different low-income categories. There are a number of prescriptives for this, but it apparently means that things like individual housing and tenancy, sustaining services, mobile crisis management, and self-help peer support will be made available to a larger number of people through the Agency for Healthcare Administration. That just out of the state this morning. So it looks like more folks are recognizing, Pam Messina, that more of these kinds of treatments and protocols are needed to a wider audience or group of clients.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's so many people that are living with trauma or maybe PTSD. Maybe they served in the military. Maybe they just had personal trauma. And sometimes those are the people that wind up with addictions or, you know, psychiatric diagnosis or homeless. And we can't forget about them. And there's been a big shift in thinking about, you know, what people have done to what have they been through that got them here. And that's what these services are going to begin to do, is to look at human beings as human beings and ask the question, what have you been through that got you here? What hurts? What's not working? And how can we help?
You had mentioned something during the break about expanding the availability of employer-based mental health care provision. Now, we know about EAP or employee assistance programs. Mm-hmm. We got one here at the university. We've made use of it on occasion. And it's a good thing to have. But does this take it one step further? How does that work?
I think, again, we're very fortunate in our area. You all have a wonderful EAP. TMH, the state of Florida, has wonderful EAP programs. And in thinking about what we do best, we thought, well, we can provide counseling in a way that ordinary people can benefit. And so we have an employee wellness offering where businesses can sign up for a minimal fee, $20 to $23, depending on how many employees, for a year. And that allows each employee to come confidentially to get 5 free sessions. And if they don't need it and their family members want to come use it, then they can come too. And what's nice about it is that it is confidential, so there's none of that backlash that you were talking about. It dials down the stigma. And people can come in and just have a safe place to process whatever it is. We get a lot of folks that have anxiety, stress, caregiving, health issues, suicidal thoughts, and we can give them support and help. Bless you.
Thank you.
And if God forbid, there's an incident in the workplace, then they can call us and we have a relationship with that group of employees anyway, and we can support them through that as well. And if there are situations or issues that we can't address, we go ahead and refer them out again to our trusted community providers.
Employees are a great audience for this sort of thing, but now there's an expanded discussion of what takes place in the schools.
Yes,
Jay Reeve over at Appalachian Center, we sat down with him not too long ago. He had been working with Senator Monford and a host of other folks within that coalition, the Mental Health Coalition,
yes,
to try to expand that. I understand now Disc Village has gotten involved. In the wake of Parkland, where now we have kids, you know, more than a year out, that have taken their own lives in reaction to the horror that took place down there. It seems like every school should have a counselor or a mental health professional or something.
Well, and I can tell you that a lot of schools do have access to a social worker, and they have some new added positions. But what I can tell you, because as a person that worked in community bereavement at Big Bend Hospice, I worked with school grief and bereavement for years and have been called in for years to deal with deaths in the school. And people really need training in dealing specifically with bereavement, with crisis support, with trauma, to be able to do that. So just not any counselor can come in. Just like you wouldn't want any doctor, you wouldn't want a leg doctor to come in and look at your ear. You want somebody who has the training. And I think part of the movement towards better mental health is to make sure that people are trained to do what they're being asked to do as far as mental health. And what I'll say is it's really important to understand that there's no quick fix when you have a Parkland or you have even the local deaths that have occurred that touched school communities here. You know, once the lights and the cameras go down on the publicity, you have lives that are shattered. And it takes consistency, and it takes patience, and it takes a lot of education to walk that journey with them. And so often we give them all the attention, all the resources, and then we pull back and assume 6 months down the road that it's ended. And what we can see with Parkland and even some of the other shooting victims is, you know, we just lost 2 young lives.
Yeah.
In Parkland, and there was help to be had. Did they use it? And, you know, was there something more that we could have done for them? And is there more that we can do for anybody that has been through a situation like that.
Because that's what we talk about, and Mike, you're in public policy, you know this, that again, that this default is, oh, it's a mental health issue. We have to address whatever it is on that basis. It's like a safe out. No, oh, this was caused by a mental health problem. We just get more counselors out there, a little bit of Ritalin, it'll all be taken care of.
Yeah, I think Pam touched on that quite well. There's always a core. You know, I've been fortunate to be able to work with Pam close to a decade now, and you know, we talk about this quite often, and there's always a core. There's a reaction to something else, and it's, as Pam tells me, drive down and find out where that core is. What is that base cause? So, you know, we can have broad-based mental health coverage, but you know, it's having the right people in the right place that can provide the right service to the individual and help identify what is causing the internal issues that they're battling with.
Yeah, and how to get the rest of us involved so that sometimes the individual is not the one who is going to go ask for help. It's going to be a family member, a friend. And we need to be in a position to say, hey, to do what, an intervention? I don't know, something, but to get them to a position where they're able to get that help that they need.
And I think it's irresponsible to always put it off to, oh, it's only a mental health issue. There's a lot of political issues. There's a lot of systems issues that we need to look at carefully and be responsible for, because the decisions that we make have an impact on communities, individuals, families, businesses, faith communities, and, you know, we just have to be very mindful in the choices we make. And if you think about mental health, well, if you think about, for instance, suicide, access to means is a huge deterrent. So there's a lot of different viewpoints about that. So, again, this is not a simple issue. No simple answers, and it takes all of us thinking at our best and working together and making clear choices with the understanding they have consequences, sometimes which mean life or death. Sometimes they just mean it affects the quality of life for human beings.
Yeah, but for any of us who are family members or friends or co-workers of folks in crisis, in
Absolutely.
Trouble, how do we help them find the help they need?
Well, I would say, again, we're fortunate here in Leon County. If you have questions, 211 Big Bend is a help and referral line. They are open 24/7, you know, 365 days a year. That's a good start. They can point you in the right direction. And from there, you can decide, okay, where do I go next?
And that's why when in our employer mental health program, our what we call our employee wellness program, we include the family in that package. You know, the actual employee may not necessarily need the service, but there may be somebody in their immediate family. So that service is extended to them. As soon as they're enrolled, those people in their immediate family are also covered.
And what usually takes place at one of these sessions? Of course, it is a case-dependent individual response that you have, but is it just for the benefit of folks who maybe have never even had a counseling session? What's it like? What can you expect?
Well, that's a good question. We actually put that on our website. What can you expect at your first counseling session? Because people don't know what to expect. And so normally they fill out a form that I send before they get there. And they come in and we review kind of what the parameters of the session are. We talk about confidentiality. We talk about the only time that I would need to disclose anything is if they were thinking of hurting themselves, somebody else, damaging property, or if they had a health emergency. And then I open it up to them and I say, what brings you here today? And normally people just go, bloop. Now, if I can sense they're nervous, that bloop means whatever it is they need to talk about. If they're a little nervous, I'll kind of say, you know, it looks like it was a little hard for you to get here, and it looks like you're a little nervous, and we just address that. But normally, people just are so grateful to be able to share and have somebody listen. I do ask some questions, usually very gently. And at the end, I'll provide resources, sometimes homework, sometimes referrals. Not a lot of homework because that's very stressful. I say, it doesn't get graded. If you don't do it, you can still come back, right? And sometimes people cry. Sometimes we laugh. Sometimes we tell stories. And at the end, I'll ask people, you know, was it what you thought? And most people will say, I just feel much better. And it was a lot easier than I thought. They said, it just feels like I've had a load lifted off me. And I just feel, and they kind of think about it, and then they say, a sense of hope that I can go on now. And it's really not me being a genius of a counselor. It is because when you give human beings a safe, non-judgmental, compassionate space, there's something that happens that sparks the resilience that I believe most human beings have within them to make it through their hardships.
It's a literal unburdening.
It
then
is a literally unburdening. And the sense of feeling lighter, the sense that I can go on and take the next step. Is it easy? No. And I tell people, this is going to be, depending on what it is, this may be a tough journey ahead. And sometimes it's going to feel worse before it gets better. And teach them skills to be able to cope with that, to handle pain, to ask for help, you know, to seek resources. And we do have some wonderful resources on our website at www.connectwithcapstone.com because people do turn to the internet. And sometimes you find wonderful information and resources there, and sometimes not so much. So in our resource list, we've tried to put what we know as credible resources that people can turn to for different issues. And I know the FSU College of Medicine also has a wonderful list that people can access in addition to 211.
The counseling is a good, I guess, base establishment for where we are, where we need to go. But what are some of the tripwires, Pam, where you go, oh, okay, we need to kick this up a notch, perhaps several notches, because just simply sitting here and talking is not going to cut it.
Absolutely. And so, again, there are times when I can see that there are serious behavioral health issues, when somebody is very actively thinking about suicide, that, you know, I have to refer out. And if it's suicide, you know, somebody's contemplating suicide, I have sat with people and I have called their physician. We've gotten them to safety. I've had to call the police occasionally, I always will have that conversation first with the client themselves. And it has, in most cases, they're willing to get help. And it takes a lot of patience when somebody's suicidal to listen through what they have to offer, because you have to be willing to listen to their reasons for wanting to die, as well as giving them the chance, kind of on their own, to figure out the reasons they still want to live. And if you don't get to that place, then you know that somebody may need to go inpatient to get some help. And, you know, we have TMH, we have Appalachee, we have Capital Regional. So there are options for people to be able to get more intensive help, whether it's with suicidality or more significant behavioral health issues.
Is the reason that so many people need a professional counselor is that most of us are such crummy listeners?
That's a big question. And I'm going to put in an advocate for one of my old favorites, Mr. Rogers. And he was a beautiful listener, and I think we can all learn from him, because you don't only need counselors to give people hope and affirmation through hard times. And he would always say, whatever is mentionable is manageable. And that's important, but you have to have somebody at the other end of whatever somebody's mentioning so that you can listen to it and you can hear it and you can validate it. And in a world where so much is, you know, a 30-second, 30-word message or communication, we're complex human beings. We need somebody who's going to give us some time. Shut your mouth and just hear what has to be said. Don't think you have to fix it. Don't think you have to agree with it, but to give them the dignity of being heard.
We're talking to Pam Messina and also Mike Urich today, and our topic is mental health care and the availability and affordability of same. If you would like to ask a question or you have a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 850-414-1234 is our number here on Perspectives. You can also send us an email. Perspectives@wfsu.org is the address on that. And we will be right back in a few moments. Don't go away. Back on Perspectives, and thank you for being a part of it here. Mike Urich and Pam Messina here with us. And continuity of care we were talking about, and this isn't a public policy thing, but every time we get into a discussion of mental health care and you get the hopeful release like the one we had this morning out of ACA that said we're going to expand mental health care provisioning to certain target populations. We want that to be available, if not in perpetuity, at least for a good long time. So if you need a counselor, you develop a relationship with that person and have invested in them all of your innermost thoughts and secrets and motivations and all, and then they say, okay, I can't see you anymore, and maybe you'll see someone else and maybe you won't. That sounds like that's kind of traumatic, Pam Messina.
It can be for certain people. And if you think about, you know, if you go to a primary care physician, you count on them learning you and your body and what you need. And it's the same thing when you have been to a trusted advisor or counselor, whether you're a teenager or an adult or a senior, that maybe you've shared some of your very personal, private thoughts, fears, worries, hopes with, and then they leave. And so, again, thinking about systems, we have to look at, are we providing adequate pay and training for our counselors, for our psychiatrists to be able to continue in the role that they have been in so that we provide some of that continuity of care. And that's, you know, high in the pie thinking, high in the sky thinking. But for us to be aware as counselors that if we have to transition out, to at least have the courtesy to let people know, if we can, the change is coming, and help them find somebody else to transition to, and to help people who are our clients understand that change happens. And as part of the treatment that we give them, to teach people how to handle change. And to be resilient through changes, whether that's in their care providers, you know, their housing, whatever. And especially with kids who have a whole life of quick change ahead of them, because we have so much change that in their lives, I have no idea what they're going to see, but I know that they need those skills. So we need to build that into our school systems.
Even in social media, we're picking up on more and more, if not resistance to change, certainly inability to cope with change.
But I think that's where you're beginning to see more information and skill building around things like mindfulness and relaxation, which some people go, oh, well, that's pretty, you know, airy-fairy fuzzy stuff. Well, what we know is it actually helps us physiologically calm down, and it gives us a way to counterbalance that fight or flight or freeze reaction that sometimes we have. And for some people, especially people who have been through trauma, that reptilian mind, that everything's dangerous, it's like the switch gets turned on and they don't know how to turn it off. So we can begin to teach our young people and our employees and our congregants ways to relax, to be mindful, to build resilience, so that when the weight of their worries and challenges hit, they're better able to face them and they have the resources to ask for help, to know where to ask for help and to receive it. To augment what they already have to get them through.
Well, Pam, you mentioned the phrase pie in the sky. The sky may be free, but the pie usually isn't, and I think that's where Reed is plugging his question into. Mr. Mahoney, how the heck are you, sir? Hey, Reed.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, man?
We are doing well, sir. I always enjoy hearing your commentary on the news of the day on Facebook, so keep it coming.
Well, I've been pretty prolific the last few days, but, you know, my family, and I think you do know this, as a matter of fact, my family and myself have been through this battle. Fortunately, we were successful in preventing what could have been a very tragic end. But I tuned in a little late to the program. And so while heartened as I am about hearing that ACA intends to expand these services, I'm wondering where the money's coming from.
Boy, that's a good question, and I'm sure that there'll be a provision in the upcoming budget in either House and or Senate, which will still have to be reconciled, as you well know, being a student of state government as
you are.
But even beyond that, we began the conversation, Reed, before you joined us, talking a little bit about how do you get a greater recognition into the nation's overall healthcare system that just like whether it's major surgery or preventive care or those kinds of things in the physical realm, we need to pay more attention when it comes to making available mental health care services through the overall umbrella systems, whether it's employer-provided insurance or whatever follows the Affordable Care Act, if that changes or whatever. And so that is a wonderful question, because anything is possible if you got enough money, right?
Well, you and I both know that, you know, go back to Senator Pete Domenici, you know, there's been a push for decades now to get mental health on a parity with everything else, but it still hasn't happened.
Yeah, and as we mentioned at the outset here, and I don't know, Mike Yerk, if you got some thoughts on that. How do you now that everyone's saying, boy, we got to get more mental health care in there, mental health care, that's what it's all about. And yet, if you don't make the funding mechanisms part of the discussion here, it's you're whistling down the wind.
Well, that's right. And the one thing that concerns me is putting out appropriations as a quick fix to a current situation and not being able to sustain it. And we've had that with the Parkland incident. You know, funds have gone to the county school systems to cover for mental health, but how long is that going to last? And we've got students that are going to need coverage, mental health counseling for quite some time. How long is that funding going to continue to go into the schools in order to support what's desperately needed?
And it's going to be up to us, because as taxpayers, we can help to set those priorities through whatever means are available there. But still, it's going to be a long haul. People don't like to pay for things that they feel they're not getting an immediate benefit from.
Well, that's true. You know, I mean, you can tell those. I mean, some people would take the position or can't take the position. Like, the money is going to the schools, and what about me? So again, you know, we have to be very cautious about taking a quick fix to a situation that expands. That's going to expand years in regard to the students, but also expands outside the school system. You know, those people that may have been impacted outside the school system from a tragedy, or just need mental health coverage beyond any type of major incident that has taken place.
Pam?
And I just wanted to speak to Reed. I want to thank you because bringing up that point about parity is important. There have been a lot of organizations for years that have been struggling. You know, NAMI and a lot of people, even locally, have been struggling to have mental health parity. And we still have a long way to go. And I can tell you that if you have a physical issue, you want to get in to see your doctor as soon as possible. And if you have a mental health emergency, you deserve the same thing. Or if you need preventative care, you want to be able to not have to wait 3 months to get in to see a counselor.
Which is usually the turnaround for a lot of these things. But you would mention something also, Mike, the proviso that you have through Capstone and that program of contracting with employers. And as we hit full employment, this is what happened in World War II. Remember when we added health care?
Yes.
As a benefit of employment, it was because we had more than full employment in World War II. Companies were stealing workers from each other. And how do you lure them in? You give them more goodies. How about free health insurance? Woo, that sounds great. And now we're down, what, in Leon County? 3.3% is our jobless rate right now, essentially full employment. Maybe more employers can add this as another employee benefit.
Absolutely. And what I can say, I just ran into one of the directors of a agency we serve, and he looked at me and he said, well, I don't think we've had to use you a lot lately, but my employees just come once in a while and say, you know, it means a lot to us just to know we have that benefit if we need it.
It sounds like a pretty high recommendation to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you also have to take the cost benefit of the program. I mean, as Pam mentioned earlier, you're looking at $20 to $23 per employee. And if you look at the level of coverage that you're getting, you're getting over $500 worth of initial free coverage. But beyond that, what the employer needs to look at as well is they're addressing a problem that is impacting productivity, impacting absenteeism. It's very difficult to come to work and be productive when your mind is dealing with an alternative issue. And this program provides that employee the opportunity to come to Capstone Center and have the discussion to help, if you will, heal the core situation that they're going through. And in return for that employer's small investment, they're helping their productivity and reducing their absenteeism.
I don't know, Mike. Are you indicating that maybe the days of you leave those problems at home there might be over?
well, we hope so.
I can tell you there's many a supervisor who has expressed gratitude that when an employee comes and is upset over an issue from home or outside work or even sometimes in work, that they can go, why don't you call Capstone?
Makes a lot of sense. And again, it is the benefit of the employer that you're looking at here, as well as the benefit of the employee. So.
And again, this is not an employee assistance program. It is a mental health counseling set-aside that you can either subscribe to independently or as part of your comprehensive EAP package.
Okay, so you've got some options to play right there. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if an agency does not use our services but does have EAP, I would encourage employees that have that benefit to use it.
In the few moments that we have left here on today's discussion of mental health care provision, one trend line that maybe, I don't know, Pam, you got to tell me, might be reversing itself was a over-reliance on medication that we saw particularly back in the 1990s. Has that changed anywhere? We're not just overly medicating people into a stupor in order to help them deal with their problems?
Well, I think that there's still a lot of room for people to think carefully about the use of medication. And it can be extremely beneficial for people that can't sleep, for people that do have diagnoses. But to think that there are some things like grief and bereavement that don't necessarily need to be medicated. And what does concern me is I have young people come to see me, and the first thing they tell me is a diagnosis they have and the list of medications they're on. So I am concerned that we still use medications sometimes in ways that may not be needed, and I'd like to see us utilize more traditional coping skills and behavioral skills and relaxation and mindfulness skills in addition to medication.
Because we certainly have had a lot of controversy surrounding early childhood development and what we have seen in some areas where alleged counselors or professionals have essentially drugged kids into a stupor over behavioral issues in school, and perhaps that has not been the best choice.
Well, and again, I think as, you know, people like Peace for the Big Bend and, you know, trauma-informed care, we begin to look at what has that child been through that is contributing to these behaviors, and are there ways that we can address some factors in that child's life to teach them different coping skills, to address those behaviors, medication being maybe only one option amongst many.
We only have about 4 minutes left here in our discussion here on perspectives as we address these mental health issues. And are we moving in the right direction? Our public policy guru over here, Mike Urich, and without getting into this is good or this is not so good, are you seeing at least, whether it's local or state policymakers, more of a recognition that, yeah, we got to pay more attention to this?
Well, like, in every incident, it has to grow. You know, whereas there are things in the past that we do today that were unthinkable or unmentionable 20 years ago. What we're hoping to move forward is the accessibility of mental health counseling, and that it is available in the community and it is, you know, easily accessible in the community, and that we do have resources that we can send you to if we can't provide you the service that we need. We want to see those days in the past where you're walking around aimlessly in the street, not knowing where to go to end. Where can I go? And that's part of the development that we had here with Capstone Center, to provide that community resource and provide that community service that was obscure in the past. It was very hard to find. And now we're here. How this is going to go in the future, I hope there's more attention to mental health care. And again, it stems from a core. It's not from the actions that we're seeing, but there is from the core, and only people like what Pam and other wonderful counselors provide can get to that core and get a true understanding of what's causing the end result, that, you know, the activities that we actually see.
Yeah, given the widespread nature of all the problems that afflict our society, I don't think you're going to be out of business anytime soon, Pam.
No, and I think we're just one of, you know, a lot of different organizations, businesses, individuals trying to raise awareness and, you know, get the people that are making appropriations and laws realize that this is essential. So if you are interested in helping the efforts, you know, get involved with NAMI Tallahassee, get involved with the Mental Health Coordinating Council, get involved with the Florida Suicide Prevention Coalition. There's a lot of people that are trying to make change.
And a lot of hurting people who need help. And
that
is what this is all about.
Absolutely.
Pam Messina and Mike Urich, I really appreciate you coming by for this discussion today.
Thank you, Tom. And we appreciate being here.
We will keep our fingers, toes, and eyes crossed. Hopefully we'll be onward and upward in spreading the word that this is a matter of grave significance that we all need to keep watching on. Thanks again,
guys. Thank you for having us.
Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today by Evan Rossi and Lido Rawls back there on the Interconnects. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we're going to preview the upcoming Community Summit on Children in Tallahassee. That's taking place May 10th. We'll also delve into the possibility of a Leon County Children's Council and what that organization might bring to our community conversation about kids. Our conversation happens a week from today right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.